From Murphy to Manzio, extraordinary athletes, coaches, administrators, and contributors have impacted the North Carolina sports landscape. For some, their talents left an indelible mark, so much so, they are enshrined in the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame. It's time to chat with one of those Hall of Famers who dared to be as tall and stately as our longleaf pines. Here is your host of 15 Minutes of Fame, Chris Edwards.
Welcome to 15 Minutes of Fame. I'm Chris Edwards. Today on the podcast, we visit with Joey Cheek, an Olympic gold medalist in speed skating. On the podcast this week, we talk about his journey from growing up in Greensboro to becoming an Olympic gold medalist, what it's like to be on the podium to hear your national anthem, and what do you do with all those Wheaties boxes? We talk about all that and more with the 2018 North Carolina Sports Hall of Famer, Joey Cheek. Joey, thank you so much for the time and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let me kind of start here with you. You grew up in Greensboro. So as someone who grew up in the triad, how do you get involved in skating and speed skating?
Yeah. Wait, you mean you didn't start speed skating when you were a kid either?
I did not.
I must have just been my group of friends. So, it's going to date me, but I grew up in the 90s. So I was a teenager in the 90s. And you might be too young to remember, but rollerblading used to be gigantic, right? Yeah. Like it was huge. And there was a club here in North Carolina that was a rollerblading speed skating club. And it was at various points the top amateur club in the country for inline speed skating. So I happened to join with an amazing group of other athletes around a time when millions of people were rollerblading. And so I was the U.S. junior national champion a couple of times on wheels. I watched the 94 Olympics and saw an American guy named Dan Jansen win a gold medal. And I said, man, I want to do that. And there's not a lot of ice skating in North Carolina. So I had to end up, kind of leaving the state early on to go start my career. So I left in 1995 or thereabouts and started traveling around the world in the country to try and, basically chase ice to try and qualify for my first national team on ice speed skates.
I'm so curious, just watching Dan Jansen and that one Olympics, like it just changed your whole perspective. How do you go from, okay, I want to do this, to I'm chasing ice, to now, like, okay, I'm going to go and do this and be an Olympian and win a medal in it?
Well, I do think it helps that I had just this right confluence of important features in my life that all came together. First and foremost, I had parents who were almost, almost pathologically unable to tell me that something is too hard or couldn't be accomplished. And so from the time I was very young, if I wanted to do something, my parents were the first people to say, you can figure out a way to do it. And I think a lot of people, the first objection comes from, people around, like, it's too hard, go figure a different way, whatever. And so I had these really supportive parents who said, whatever you want to do, if that's what you want to do, you can do it. And I, the one thing that people don't always get is when they hear rollerblading, they think, kind of rollerblading it around in the park. But really it was, I was training twice a day before and after school from the time I was 11 years old, weekends and then full time throughout the summer. So it was every bit as serious as any, sort of high school sport or even maybe, on the way to doing collegiate sports as a teenager. So it wasn't like I was just starting from nothing. So when I saw Dan Jansen, I was already one of the best inline speed skaters for my age. And when I put on ice skates, it was just, phenomenal what that feeling was to be on those skates. And I was hooked right away.
What was the hardest transition from the inline skating to the ice?
Well, a big difference for me was, speed skaters on ice, they're big, like they got they're famous for these big giant legs and this power. And I've always been wiry and I've always been thin. And so when I first came out there, I just didn't have the power you need to be a speed skater. I had great feel for the ice, we'd say, like great way to knowledge of pushing that just helps you go fast. Like a golf, it's very similar to a golf swing. Like you can tell when somebody has a natural feel for a swing. So I had a great stroke on skates, but just no power yet. And I was really fortunate as well that the sport was moving to indoors and faster ice. And we switched from the regular skates to these things called clap skates, where they're hinged on the front. And when you get to the end of a push, the blade disconnects and gives you a couple extra inches pushes. What that meant was all of a sudden the sport was getting way faster. And the guys who were huge, they actually were suddenly at a big disadvantage to the guys who were a little bit more wiry, because we didn't have as much weight to carry around the corners at 40 plus miles an hour. So in some sense, had I been born 10 years earlier, I don't know that I would have had the right gifts physically to be successful. But when I was coming up, you know, my body type and my particular set of skills and the work ethic of 10 years all came together, you know, at my two Olympic Games.
Let me ask you about the first Olympic Games in 2002 in Salt Lake City. You won bronze there in the 1,000 meters. How special was it to be able to medal in your home country?
Oh, my gosh. I almost wish the two Olympics could have been reversed. So I won my first medal in Salt Lake City in the U.S. And then 4 years later, we'll talk about it, I'm sure, but I won gold and silver at that Games. I would have loved to have won a gold medal in my home country. However, that was probably the bronze is probably a more important medal in my life. I mean, the gold is the thing that the public recognizes, but that was my first ever international medal. So I'd never won a junior world championships medal, a World Cup medal. I'd never won at an international level before the Olympics. So I like to joke, that's a good place to start if you're going to do it. And the reason I actually say it's so important is in some ways it demystified it. So I had a really rough year that 2002. I was really unhappy. I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. And I felt like if I didn't perform well, my self-worth was really wrapped up in whether or not, you know, I was the best speed skater, which is it's an unhealthy way to live. And ultimately, it's fairly inconsequential in the grand scheme of things, whether or not I'm the best speed skater in the world. But having that experience made me realize just how it's a wonderful thing to be able to be great at what you're doing. Being good at sports is not worth being miserable. It's much more important to do this thing because you love it. And it's really fun because now I'm a grown up and I have to have a real job. And now I realize the worst day there is still pretty much the best day in any other career.
How much did winning bronze, though, did it motivate you to go out and chase that gold and that silver that you won 4 years later?
No. It's interesting. Once I had at that point, I actually realized I as a person, I didn't need to win gold or silver. I didn't need to do better to feel happier. In fact, I don't think I even realized how much of a difference it was. When you win a bronze, especially in the US, you get like really good media coverage for about one day and then it's gone, right? And people don't really care. They kind of care. But I've told this story a number of times and it's funny that it's certainly the case. I've met other bronze medalists. But in the US as well, if people meet you, oh yeah, you're in the Olympics. It's so cool. How'd you do? To win a medal, that's always the second question. Yeah, I did actually. What'd you get? I won a bronze. And they always go, oh, that's too bad. And you're like, no, man, that's really, really good. That's unbelievably hard to win a bronze medal at the Olympics. So I kind of figured the gold would be like, maybe that's like 10% better, I thought. And so I wasn't more motivated. In fact, I was like, I'm only going to do this if I love doing it. Like, I'm not going to spend all these years away from my family, all these years training. I'm going to do this because I love it. And I performed better when I was happy, when I enjoyed what I was doing. My performance got much better, but the experience also was a lot more fun. So, I mean, this is the greatest, you know, possible way you can spend a career. So it wasn't more motivated. It was in some ways just being able to enjoy the experience more.
What do you remember about Torino in 2006 when you won gold and you won silver?
Oh my gosh. You know what? The main thing I remember is feeling, you know, when you hear athletes talk about being in the zone or flow state, it felt like that for the 6 weeks up to and through the Olympics. It was as if you couldn't do anything wrong. Like you just made a chrome, like nothing sticks to you. And it was phenomenal. Every plan I'd ever made was going better than I'd ever planned. So I was skating better than I ever skated. I felt like I had this perspective that was better than I'd ever had. I was happier than I'd ever been. And, you know, this combination of performance and realization that I was going to have a real, like, I was going to have a great Olympics. I became the world champion, which was a childhood dream. In fact, it was only myself and Dan Jansen and Eric Heiden were the only three American men who had done it at that time in sprints. So it was like, I just felt like I could not lose. And it was fantastic. And I got to admit, that is a dragon I have chased pretty much ever since. Like, it's hard to regain that feeling, even to have it for a day, much less 6 weeks straight.
I'm so curious what the emotions are like after you win gold and you're on the podium and they put the gold medal around your neck and then you hear your national anthem being played. Yeah. After you win gold. What's that emotion like?
Man, it's the moment after the immediate moment I won, that I realized I won, the first emotion I had was relief. Because you can imagine a lifetime of dreaming of something. And you're like, you don't know it's going to happen. You think it will and you hope it will. And then it does. And you just go, oh my God, it's happened. I've done this thing. I will have this forever if right? Forget arrested. It'll say Olympic gold medalist, Joe Cheek, arrested for blah, 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 blah. So that's this big relief. And then you're on the podium and it you don't remember it except for in like, you know, you kind of remember it in photographs. I remember it was snowing and I remember the snow falling. And that's about all I remember of it. Like, I remember looking out at the podium or the piazza there, because we're in Italy and it was beautiful. This like, you know, central square with this giant podium and lights, and the crowd was out there. And I think I saw like my mom was out there, and I remember the snow falling, and I hope it was snowing, because otherwise I have like a fake memory. But that's about all I remember of it. Was it was just so fast. And then the memory is just like highlights, I guess.
How many Wheaties boxes did you collect with your face on it?
Oh man, we got a lot. They send you a box full of them, and they sent us a giant one. So like, I have like a bigger than life size, like cardboard cut out of me. And it is at my mom's house here in North Carolina, because I didn't come back to North Carolina for a lot of years. And it was, I mean, I visited, I didn't live in North Carolina for a lot of years. And it was living in like the dining room turned office for a long time, haunting guests. And I think at some point somebody threw it in the garage. So you get a lot of them. I think they're almost all gone. Like, we've given them to people throughout the years. People want things with, you know, autograph one and give it out. But I think they're almost all gone. But there's still somewhere a giant, like literally, you know, 7 foot tall Wheaties box of me in the house.
I love it. Two thoughts and I'll let you go. Tell me about Right to Play, because you donated your Olympic winnings to that organization. Yeah. What makes that organization special to you?
Well, they were doing some just incredible work and continue to around the world. For people who are in refugee camps, internally displaced, people who are driven out of their homes by war and strife and famine. And what they do is they go to places in which people have sort of reached basic safety. So refugee camps, a lot of people in the U.S. don't realize, refugee camps, oftentimes people will be forced there by war or whatever, and there's nowhere for them to go, and they're stuck there for years. Like, people will just be in refugee camps for years, and they have the basic essentials. You know, they'll have food and shelter. But that's it. And so you have children who grow up in refugee camps, and Right to Play brings sport and play programs sort of as a modality for education, but also for teaching conflict resolution and gender equality and tolerance and all sorts of the gifts that we get from sport in the U.S., fair play and hard work. You know, a lot of these kids are just sitting in this camp with nothing to do. And so Right to Play goes in there, brings sport and play and coaches local coaches. So it's a very cost effective method and brings sport to kids who otherwise would just be sitting in a tent waiting for the next meal sort of a thing, or not even meal, the next gruel. So it was a no brainer. It was actually supported by the Olympic movement for quite a few years. And the then CEO was another childhood hero of mine, a speed skater from Norway named Johan Olav Koss. So I knew I wanted to do something with the Olympic bonus money, and I wanted to do something that would cause a bit of a media stir, since I knew the press would cover it. And it was the perfect org for me at that time.
I'll let you go this thought. This is kind of how I like to end all these podcasts. You've been so successful as a speed skater. For someone who just wants to be successful in life, what do you think the biggest key to be a successful person is?
Boy, that's a lot of pressure, Chris.
Yeah, sorry.
You know what? I'll say this. There's just so many times when you don't feel like you're that good at the thing. And it's wild. I've started a company now, and it's wild because I'm sort of leaning on all of those lessons from athletics. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, am I not good at this thing? And is this just like, is this the thing that's going to break me? I've been successful at everything I've tried, and this is the thing that's going to break me. And the thing is, until we lay down at the end of days and that's it, the only thing that stops you is your own efforts. And for me, the successful people I've met and the times I've been successful is on those days when, you know, it's not working and you just feel like you want to throw your hands up. You just keep stepping one more day, and you will get through it.
That's awesome. Thanks for doing this. And thanks for all you do for the Hall of Fame.
Thank you. Nice to meet you. And we'll talk soon.
Joey, thanks for the time, and thank you for listening to this week's edition of 15 Minutes of Fame. For the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame, I'm Chris Edwards.